Philip's shot went wild. He hadn't time to turn his head before he was grabbed hard from behind.
You brat! You totally senseless nincompoop! Wasn't shooting her once treachery enough for you? Did you have to do it again and mess up our escape?
I did it for you.
St. Helens picked him up in very muscular arms and shook him.
You did it for yourself, you show-off brat. Don't you tell me otherwise. Don't you even think otherwise.
She's a good witch, son. She's the kind we can deal with.
A witch is a witch is a witch.
Not this witch, son.
She's a good woman. Her intentions were honorable when she and I first met. She's not the enemy. Our enemy's back at our home palace.
Zoanna?
Zoanna.
But I...
You were bewitched, had your mind twisted. We all did. Same as the bitch did to John Knight long time ago. But now, we know. We know it's her, and we can manage to do something.
You may be right, Generals Riley and Crum. But I was going by experience. A witch is treacherous, cruel, and unforgiving. That's how Melba was. How could I think that this witch would be different?
You couldn't, Philip.
St. Helens opened his hands and dropped him. Philip turned. There, standing before them, apparently unarmed and unprotected, was the witch who, to his eyes, looked exactly like the one who had raised him. Only, not quite. Up close, this woman was softer, with more agreeable lines, as if she had been known to smile sincerely.
You did what you thought was right. You knew that Melba had always deceived you and that her word was not to be trusted. You assumed I would take advantage of General Riley's trust. You are a boy. You thought as a boy does. Make a witch harmless and she will not harm you or those you love. It is an old recipe, long believed. To truly follow the recipe calls for the witch's complete destruction. In order to destroy a witch, you have to believe in her malevolence.
I did.
And now you don't?
I don't know. I guess if you want to harm us, you can.
I'm glad that you are not so certain. Come, the three of you. There is someone in the glen you will want to see.
The other witch?
Yes, you might say that. But she is no stranger to any of you. I think, Philip, that you are going to be surprised to learn exactly who she is.
In the glen, near the large tree with the flat crystal set in its big bowl, lovely Charlaine stretched out her arms as though to long-lost children or her dearest friends.
Philip, St. Helens, General Crum, as you now must realize, it is our old enemy that we have to fight. Zoanna and the man who appears to be but isn't King Rufford now control Kelvinia. Every soldier, whether Kelvinia, Herman, or a mercenary from Throod, has been deceived. Each of you has been tricked similarly. Klingland and Karns are not the enemy, though they are the kingdom you fight.
I know we were bewitched by her, but you, Charlaine, a witch?
A necessary recruit, I'm afraid. Charlaine had the talent, and I had need for it. Fortunately for all of us, she learned quickly and well.
There's something else. My son Kelvin is here now, back in this frame, and not far from where we stand. I saw him in the crystal.
Then we're saved. The Round here will make everything right. He'll win this war. And
you forget that the real war is inside Kelvinia.
Yes, yes, of course. He'll get them out of the palace before you can say scat. Burn wicked Zoanna as she deserves. Burn the imposter king as well.
No, not immediately, anyhow. There's something more important he has to do.
More important than destroying the former queen of Rudd and the former king from the other place? More important than stopping the fighting?
Yes, far more important. I have consulted the cards, and the cards have never lied to me. There's a nodule, a crisis point. Either he fulfills this subsidiary task promptly and without fail, or this fighting will not end and the prophecy will never be fulfilled. For the good of all of us and the eventual fulfillment of the prophecy, he has to do what his mother tells him. Each of you, understanding or not, must help me to that end.
Kelvin, urged on by Mervania Kamira's thoughts, walked slowly down the road that led to the glen.
I'm getting into trouble. I really can't trust the Chimera. It's putting me right into the hands of the witch.
When have you not been in trouble, stupid mortal? And why would I want to have you in the hands of a witch?
To make a deal, maybe, as you did with me.
And that you haven't yet delivered on. Oh, be brave, little hero, and use some sense.
That's all right for you to think, Ravania. You don't have to face a witch.
You faced me, Kelvin. Do you honestly think a witch could be worse than I am?
No. Nothing's worse than a chimera.
Oh, I'm glad you realize it. And remember, I'm right here in your thoughts, protecting my interests.
Ahead, he could see five people waiting. Two women, two big men, and one large boy or man like himself. Was one of those witches really his mother?
Do you doubt me, Kelvin?
Kelvin felt chastised. He walked into the glen. They were there. St. Helens in prisoner clothes, more crumb in worn and filthy general's uniform. Philip, the former king of Aratex in filthy common clothes. A short, smiling woman who looked astonishing like Melba, the witch he had caused to burn. And, most surprisingly of all, a woman who appeared to be his mother.
Kelvin, we have to talk.
A moment later, Charlene was hugging him hard as a mother long deprived must hug her son.
What's this?
Charlene touched the copper sting on his back.
A chimera's sting, mother.
I thought it might be. Good, you hold on to that. Someday it may prove important.
Charlene, you must show him.
Yes, I suppose I ought to. Come, son. Over to this tree, over to this crystal. Now, what I'm going to show you may be a shock. Please be brave, son. I know you can be.
Mom, I just want to get rid of Zoanna and return home to my wife.
Listen to her, you idiot. You won't like this.
Again, Kelvin found himself placing more credence in the monster than in his mother. He went with Charlene to the tree. Charlene's fingers stretched out, and there was a tiny spark that danced between her fingers and then from her fingertips to the crystal. Suddenly, the crystal was a window on a distant scene, as other magic crystals had been. A madwoman stared and gibbered, crouching in a corner. On her wrists and ankles were chains. She was naked and grotesquely pregnant, as though she were set to deliver not a child, but a colt. Her skin had a coppery sheen. Suddenly, the features of the woman became preternaturally clear.
Helm? Helm?
Yes, that is she.
Helm! Helm! No, no! Please!
In the crystal, a raw piece of meat appeared. Impaled on a stick, it waved before the face of the woman he tried not to believe was Helm. The madwoman focused her glassy eyes on the meat. Her fingers curled. She licked her lips. Suddenly, her neck shot out fast, like that of a striking reptile. Her teeth sank into the flesh. Blood squirted and ran from the corners of her mouth. Her chained wrists lifted, and her clawed hands pushed the meat farther and farther into her savagely chomping maw.
No! No! No!
Accept it, son.
His mother moved her hand, and the magic scene vanished. It was now just a flat piece of crystal stuck in a tree bowl.
Mother, what can I do? Where is she? How can I...
She's in the royal palace.
Good. I'll go there immediately and...
No, son. You must not.
Why not?
The evil queen is there and will not be lightly subdued. In any event, there is no time for that. The queen put the spell on Helm, but cannot undo it. There is an antidote, and you must get it for Helm before she gives birth. That could be at any time, and that birthing will kill her.
What antidote? Where?
Where you got your copper sting, son. The chimera has it.
It has?
Had the chimera held out on him?
No. I did not know about this until you entered this frame and contacted your mother.
But I have no idea what the antidote is.
Helba here knows. There's a powder. A powder no chimera can live without. It has an opposite effect in cases like this.
What is this powder? How will I know it?
I have it. I never thought I would need to give any of it away. But I see I do.
Kelvin could hardly wait to reach the transporter. He opened the huge metal door with the help of the gauntlets and leaped inside. He barely took time to set the control for the Chimera's world and was off. After what his father had termed special effects, he found himself in a somewhat more dusty chamber facing a Frugir. The Frugir held out a small packet composed of one large folded leaf. Kelvin took it.
This is it?
It is in there, Kelvin. Three little grains that will expand to a powder. Be careful you don't sneeze on them.
Thanks, Mervania. I'll get back with those dragonberry seeds when I can.
Hurry! You haven't much time.
Right!
Clutching the packet, Kelvin leaped back into the transporter. The sky was orange and cloud-filled, and it was a good day for Mirvania to be working in the garden. Why was she helping this inferior life form? Hadn't she paid her debt to it when she let it and its fellows go? An inferior life form was, after all, an inferior life form.
That's what I've been telling you, Mirvania.
Merton, you know that isn't nice, scanning my thoughts that way.
You're doing it with Kelvin and his kind.
Of course. They're inferior life forms.
Foodstuffs.
Oh, if you will.
I knew we should have eaten them. What I don't understand, Mirvania, is why you gave them the powder.
You know, Merton. You know if you think about it.
You think about it for me.
I don't want to.
Do it anyway.
Oh, very well.
Merton was so vexing sometimes. Without giving it great attention, she recalled the egg clutch they had laid just after dining on a stringy old wizard. There had been something wrong with it, as she soon realized. The eggs didn't have coppery shells, but were soft. And inside, there was no more mind activity than from insects. Concentrating ever so little, she had gleaned that soft, single-headed beings were being formed that would closely resemble foodstuffs. The horror of producing monsters was too much, and the antidote, had it been available, had to be taken before the laying. There had been only one thing to do, and her body had a head for it.
There. Satisfied, Merton?
Not quite. The offspring of the foodstuff female will be like us. If she delivers while under the influence of the Chimera Drake root, it'll have three heads and copper in its blood. In time, it'll grow a sting. Why destroy our own, Mirvania? Why prevent its birth?
Dunderhead! Consider the horror. One of us raised by mortals, cared for by the very inferior life forms that are our food. Assuming they care for it at all, they might instead imprison or destroy it. No, any chimera who comes into being must be here with us, in proper society, so as not to be stunted by regressive influences.
I understand, Mirvania. Don't get so excited. You're making us ill.
I don't care if I do. Kelvin had to have the antidote, and I provided it. After she takes it, the female won't lay an egg containing a superior life form.
It'll be dead, the hatchling and the female. An inferior life form won't adjust.
Possibly. I hadn't considered that.
Well, at least there won't be a living superior life form among inferiors.
If the antidote reaches the female in time.
Yeah, but if that inferior female dies too, he may reconsider about fetching our dragonberry seeds.
But he made a deal!
He did, but inferior life forms sometimes forget things when under stress.
Then she had it. She would have to be there mentally when the antidote was administered. Then, with a little guidance of precisely the right nature.
Yes!
Someone ringing the bell at the gate. She reached out mentally. A Frugir was there, and in its arms was something that shocked Mirvania.
Why, this changes everything.
As the sun was setting, Kelvin found his mother and Helba waiting where they had promised outside the palace. He cut the speed of his belt, lowered his feet, and landed before them.
You get it, Kelvin?
Right here. The Chimera sent a Frugir to meet me at the transporter.
Well, that's nice, dear. Now, Zoanna and the False King have fled the palace. Helba is trying to locate them with her crystal. She's stronger now. She says I've been a big help to her. Come now.
But the queen?
Oh, Helba can counter her fireballs. Once it was two witches against one, the queen was done for and she knew it. She won't want to give herself away, but if she does, Helba will be ready. Can you hurry?
Good idea.
Kelvin activated his belt. Scooping his mother up in his arms, he hopped flew the remaining distance. He carried her through the wall blasted open by Helba, through the twilight-lit throne room and the ballroom and down the halls.
Here. This is it.
Charlaine indicated the guest room that Kelvin and Helm had once shared. Kelvin never paused. With all the strength of his left gauntlet, he shoved in the door and paused, hovering in midair. Dr. Sturck looked up birdlike and agitated at the bedside. John turned, her mouth an O of surprise. On the bed, limbs chained to the bedpost, was a bloated, misshapen thing of pure horror.
She's having her contractions, but there's no way she can birth it without destroying herself. I could cut, but...
Let me down. Let me down this instant.
Kelvin touched down his feet and shut off his belt. He lowered his mother to the floor. She started across the room. Night fell in an instant.
Darn!
Charlene snapped her fingers. Immediately, a little ball of fire appeared near the ceiling and stayed there, brightening until it gave off more light than there had been from the lamps.
Mother! What?
That's my fireball. The darkness is Zawana's mischief. She gave Helm the poison potion. Helba may need a little help dealing with the queen, and I'm going to be busy here. Why don't you go outside and find her?
Mother, the powder!
Yes, and fast. Give it to me.
Kelvin handed her the leaf packet. She held it near Helm's face. Charlene touched the packet with a fingernail. A cloud of pinkish smoke obscured Helm's face and head.
Mother! She's...
Charlene raised a finger. The cloud was gone. Helm lay there, sickly and pale, her eyes shocked and unbelieving.
Kelvin! Dr. Stirk! Mother Charlene! It's gone!
I know it is, dear. But your baby isn't.
But...
What?
Will you give over, Oaf? The job is only half done. Let me concentrate on them. The situation is critical.
Kelvin shut his mouth. Oddly, he felt better knowing that the Chimera was present.
This is no ordinary delivery, Helm. Now you know what is entailed. Are you strong enough?
I'll have to be.
Then focus on the first and bear down.
I'll try.
Darn! Sorry, Kelvin, you shouldn't hear your mother swear.
Is she dead?
No, of course not. But we're all going to be if you don't get moving.
What should I do?
How should I know? Go find Helba.
But...
Your life and Helm's and all the others depend on it. Now go!
Helm's eyes flickered open.
No! Go, Kel. You wouldn't like what happens here.
Believe her, inferior form.
Hardly realizing what he did, Kelvin left the palace. Outside, a gust of wind struck him in the face and almost drove him back. Rain spattered hot and smelling of sulfur. Where was Helba?
Over here!
There she was, hanging on to the gatepost. He activated his belt and flew over to her.
Kelvin, I need your help. I can't do it without you or Charlene, and your mother has her hands more than full. So it has to be you. I can't contain them.
I'll do what I can. What can I do? Tell me, Helba, tell me!
A great ball of fire looped across the sky. Helba raised her hands, and a smaller ball formed at her fingertips. The small fireball shaped itself into an arrow and shot skyward as though from a bow. Witch's fire collided above them.
I'm getting weaker, and she's getting stronger. With Charlene's help, I had her beaten. But now I am alone, and her fireballs are getting closer before I can nullify them. I was shooting them down at the horizon, but now it's almost overhead, and soon I won't be able to stop them at all. I never thought Zoanna would recover so rapidly, and well, if Charlene doesn't finish quickly with that Chimera, so she can add her power to mine.
What?
Get that thing off your back!
The sting?
Of course the sting! What else have you got on your back? Get its butt down on the ground, way down, in contact with the dirt, point to point east, where that fireball came from.
Numbly, Kelvin did as directed.
There!
Now Helba's fingers lightly touched the sting and moved up and down its copper surface. Lightning flashes came from her fingers and were reflected by the copper.
What? What?
Shut up! I've got to locate her, and I can't use the crystal. When a fireball comes, you'll zap it. This is a case where science can counter magic, as with the Mover weapon.
But I don't know how to...
Helba made a gesture. Where Helba had been, there was a large white bird resembling a dovegen. Kelvin blinked, and then the bird was in the sky, flying, darting from side to side. Another fireball appeared from the east. This one was smaller than the last, not much larger than the bird. It streaked for the bird, and Kelvin stared with open mouth as his gauntlets tingled. He grasped the top of the sting shaft with his left hand and put his right hand farther down, as far as he could reach. He tried to will lightning to stop the fireball. A long, thin bolt shot from the tip of the sting and stretched out and upward. Above him, the fireball sent by Zoanna was intercepted, pierced as if by an arrow. The fireball vanished.
I did it! I shot down a fireball!
Below, where the fireball had been, a bird fluttered groundward in the fading light.
No! No! No!
A blackness detached itself from the dark and reached up a paw. The howcat. Helba's familiar. Was it trying to tell him something? Another fireball appeared. This one was larger than the last. Obviously, Zoanna was gaining strength. Angry, determined, Kelvin put his hands on the copper sting and made the lightning jump. The bolt hit the fireball. He was getting weaker. He could feel it in his legs and arms. It seemed that it was his own life energy that powered the shots. He had to keep knocking out those fireballs. It was up to him then. He and the gauntlets and the Chimera's sting.
The Chimera!
He tried thinking to Mavania, but got no answer. There was no indication that she was tuning him in now. What was going on within the palace? Looking down in the moment of a lightning flash, he saw every black hair standing up on Katba's back. The animal's tail looked like a sharply bristled brush. A phenomenally large fireball rushed with blurring speed across the sky. Concentrating hard, he threw the lightning. The little paw touch on the copper shaft felt like the blow of a hammer. The sting tipped. Remembering that Helba had said the butt should make contact with the ground, he pushed down on it. Still, the tip tipped, pointing more visibly, more directly at the fireball that was lighting the sky. Streamers of fire faded rapidly. The lightning bolt vanished. Kelvin turned and saw a long, low shape charge from the palace into the night. It looked a lot like a small dragon, but of course that couldn't be. A white bird, singed and sooty and apparently almost dead, fell beside Katba. It lay there in the lightning's flash. Katba sniffed it as all went dark.
Oh, that was some trip.
You're back?
Of course I'm back. For a dim-witted boy, you ask the dumbest questions.
I'm sorry, Helba. I thought...
You thought that fireball got me. That's what you were supposed to think. That's what Zoanna was supposed to think. Yeah, yes, Katba. You did right. Can't depend on a hero for everything, particularly one as inexperienced as this.
Helba, what did you...
Found them. Cave in the mountainside. Now it's up to you, me, and Charlene. Oh, get that fireball, will you?
Almost absently, Kelvin directed the Chimera's sting.
But Mother is...
Here. And congratulations, hero. You are now the husband of a relatively healthy, loving wife and the father of a healthy, squalling baby boy.
And a rather pretty baby girl.
The enormity of the change in his life hit him then, as did the ground before he had half realized.
Wake up, hero! Wake up!
He felt her slapping him.
Does he do this often, Charlene?
I wouldn't know, Helba. We'll have to ask his wife.
Wife? Helm! The baby! Babies!
Kelvin sat up, then stood up. There were stars in the sky, not all of his making. A moon, bright and coppery as a Chimera's haunch, lighting the grounds of the Kelvinian palace. He made his way unsteadily to where John stood holding his daughter. The baby's face seemed oddly familiar. The eyes were dark, almost coppery. He froze. That face. After allowing for the difference in age.
Don't be concerned. All foodstuffs look alike to us, too. She favors me only slightly.
What's the matter, Kel? She's not ugly. She's remarkably pretty for a newborn baby. And so's her brother, Mother says. Nothing wrong with either of them.
But
what your mother doesn't want to tell you is that there were three. The dragon fled.
But
it was a very tricky disenchantment, Kelvin. You can't undo in a minute something that has developed for weeks. We saved your wife's life by breaking the Chimera into three. Boy, girl, and dragon. You may keep the first two. That's fair, isn't it?
Kelvin's mouth was stuck halfway open.
Now go in there and see your wife. And be brave when they tell you about the third. It was the best that could be done, Kelvin. The two are completely human, except... They will be telepathic. Sorry about that. It just couldn't be helped. Now be on your way. I'll be on mine. I have business at home to hold me for a while.
He felt her presence fade. She was gone. Kelvin shut his mouth and started toward the palace.
I know she wants to see you, but not just yet. It was a difficult delivery, and there's blood, and she's sleeping.
True, and we do have other business out here. Stand by, Kelvin.
He stood by. John turned and walked into the palace with the baby girl.
Later we must talk, Kelvin.
But right now we must deal with the Queen, or all can still be lost.
Yes, I'll help here.
We have to get to work.
The fireballs. Are you watching? I forgot to...
She has quit sending them for the time being. It takes as much energy to generate them as to abolish them. I must admit, I'm surprised at her strength. If you hadn't come out when you did, we'd have been finished.
Do you think they're trying to escape?
I think they're planning something. Zoanna swore she'd never give up. If that's so, we'll have to finish her.
She'll come back if we don't, won't she?
Probably. One thing you can say for her, she's not a quitter.
Nor is Roforth. He's just as bad.
Fortunately, Roforth hasn't her magic. Let's go get them.
To that cave?
As I told you, you ask the dumbest questions. Of course to the cave!
How will we...
Charlaine and I may not need you there. Hand your mother the anti-magic weapon. It won't crack Zoanna's barrier, but it just might help. You stay here with the Sting and Katba and watch for fireballs. Your former queen is just mean enough to try one final attack on the palace.
I'll watch.
Kelvin handed his mother the Muvar weapon. Then he thought again and handed her the belt and short scabbard.
I'm sure you will. Charlaine, hop on my back.
With astonishment that seemed lately never to cease, Kelvin watched his mother climb piggyback on Helba's aging shoulders. Then, as the moon hid under clouds and it was as dark as the inside of a serpent, Helba used magic. The moon came back, and there was a white dovegen climbing into the sky with what looked like a small gray shrew house clinging with tiny paws to its feathers. The bird disappeared into the dark sky. There were no lightnings, no flaming balls of witch fire. John watched Hel nursing her firstborn and felt a stirring inside her that she had never honestly felt before.
I'm sure they'll be all right. I wasn't certain. We physicians have so little training in magic.
I'm sure that can change.
It will. It will have to. After all, magic is the basis of all healing.
I've heard that all my life. From Mother, mostly.
John looked at the window and was surprised how light it had become. The ball of fire Charlaine had left had gradually grown dimmer, until now it was about as bright as that of twin oil lamps.
I'll light the lamps again, Doctor. I'm not certain how long my mother's light will last.
Probably almost until morning.
John busied herself with the lamps. She hadn't a coal to apply to the wicks, so she simply held them near the witch's fire and, not surprisingly, to her at least, they lit.
Good girl, John.
Doctor, do you mind if I go out and see what Kelvin and our mother are about? It has been a while.
No, indeed, John. I'm wondering about that myself.
Dr. Stirk took the baby from her.
Oh! Please, John, find out about Kelvin.
Don't worry about him. He's our hero, and nothing bad will happen to him. He didn't come in before because I asked him not to. Oh, there was blood, and you were just about unconscious.
Of course. You're right, John. You almost always are.
John left the palace, sling in hand. She was wondering if what she'd told Helen was true. Prophecy or no prophecy, she knew she had, on more than one occasion, saved her brother's life. Kelvin stood at the gatepost in the moonlight. His hands were on a copper something that looked a little like a dragon spear that she hadn't noticed before, in the mixed excitement of the birthings.
Kelvin?
John! Is Helen all right? Are the babies...
Calm yourself. They're all fine. Helen's asking for you. As soon as you finish here, you can go see her.
I have to watch the sky for fireballs. Mother and our ally have gone to finish something.
You mean the witch from the Twin Cities, don't you?
Yes. Yes, that's what I mean. Helba thinks they're licked and that she can finish them.
Isn't that a job for a hero?
I'm not complaining.
You've sent back Zoanna's fireballs, Kel.
This stopped them.
Why stop them? Why not send them back?
Witches erect magic barriers when they expect magical attack or counterattack. The return fireballs might have bothered Zoanna, but they wouldn't have crisped her unless she'd dropped her guard. She might even have been poised to bounce them back again, and that could have made it worse for us.
She maintained that through magic?
Yes.
Kelvin, why don't you go after them?
I'm supposed to guard the palace. If I neglect my post and the queen sends one more fireball, we'll lose even if we kill Zoanna. Anyway, Helba can handle it.
Are you certain?
Why?
She bit her lower lip and tried to see off into the darkness past the forest to the mountainside. There was just the faintest of flashes there. First high up, then low down.
Look, Kelvin, isn't that a battle? Aren't the witches going at it hard?
I don't see. I can't see past the forest.
It is. The witches are battling. Kelvin, I think you should go and help.
But they've got the Muvar weapon.
But it may not be enough. Zoanna isn't interested in destroying the palace. Helba and Mother have her occupied.
You really think I should...
Yes.
All right, then.
Kelvin took up the copper spear and strapped it to his back. He did something to his belt, and his feet left the ground, and he soared like an untethered cloud. He looked back once, and then he was flying through the moonlight in the direction of the mountainside.
Yes, Kitty. Kelvin's off to be a hero, and I know that some way he'll save the day. Because he is guarded by the prophecy, while others aren't. I wish I was going with him. I wish you and I could fly.
Something stung her legs, like a jolt of what her father called static electricity, but which she had always thought magic. The stars grew smaller, and somehow the grass and the gatepost grew high. Ozone was in the air, and there was a taste in her mouth that surely she had never tasted before. She flexed her white wings. A black creature the size of a shrew house climbed up between her shoulders and gently gripped her feathers with claws. John flapped her dovegen wings and flew after Kelvin. Helba strained to keep the barrier erected. She could feel it bulging inward, pushing at them, wanting to break. The heat from the steadily roaring flames was getting to her, and worse still, to her apprentice.
And now, Charlene!
There was only one thing left to try, and she tried it. Hate technology though she might, there was such a thing as a mixture of technology and magic. She raised Kelvin's Muvar weapon to point at the cliff, though where it pointed hardly mattered. She pressed its trigger. The fireball receded from before them. It retreated to the cliffside and the entrance to a cave. It stopped there, held in check by Zoanna's barrier. She was weakening alarmingly fast. That treacherous injury she had taken on the battlefield still vitiated her strength. She needed far more recuperation time than she had gotten. Now she regretted telling Kelvin to remain at the palace. She needed him here with his copper sting. With that, he might throw a non-magical electrical bolt through the barrier. That would be the end of Zoanna and the worst of her many consorts. The feathered crossbow bolt, definitely not magic, protruded from her arm. Blood started from around the shaft. She had only heartbeats left, if that, to maintain consciousness. Heartbeats to contain the barrier protecting them from the witch's fire. She could deal with the wound by focusing her magic on it, for it was not a critical one. But if she did that, there would be no barrier to Zoanna's magical attack. She had to maintain that barrier. The wound burned horribly. Her arm seemed to swell to twice its normal size. She lost feeling in the extremity. Her finger loosened on the Muvar's weapon. The weapon dropped, and she after it.
Helba! Helba!
Good shot, Roforth.
Nothing to it, my love. Better get them now, love, while you have the chance.
Oh, I'm going to, sweetie, but I intend to savor my victory.
Look who's there. Can you see him in the morning light?
Kelvin.
That's right. We've got the entire bunch at our mercy. Only we have no mercy.
Burn them! Burn them!
In good time.
Zoanna sharpened her eyesight, a trick she had only recently learned. The thin, tawny-haired troublemaker and prophesied curse was definitely there. He was trying to help Helba, and at the same time, he was looking up at them. Helba was almost finished, and he was almost finished. She began forming a fireball in front of the ledge. Roforth picked up his crossbow, tried to put another bolt in it, and tried to crank it taut. Zoanna was borrowing his strength to cast her magic.
For God's sake, Zoanna, hey, you're weakening me too much.
How much is too much? This will be the fullest revenge, Roforth. You didn't know I knew about the maid, did you? You thought you could be unfaithful. That was an error on your part.
You were unfaithful.
Zoanna is Zoanna. My consorts are my consorts. You were only a consort, my sweet.
Was
sweet.
Oh, Zoanna, you're draining me completely. You're killing me.
I am your unfaithfulness. It's all part of my triumph. For my next consort, I think I'll take a young and inexperienced boy. Oh,
That guardsman who stole your prize mare and ran off and joined with that fool St. Helens. What's his name? Ah, yes, Lomax. Yes, for a time he might be quite pleasant. With what I know now, I can make him come to me. Come and perform delightfully.
Zoanna!
Feeling a bit smug about it, she moved the fireball to where Helba's barrier had been, past the spot to where Kelvin could feel the heat and not quite fry. The boy was now trying desperately to get the chimera sting from his back.
Excellent, Kelvin. With that, you really could destroy me.
Now, his mother was helping him, pulling at a thong, guiding it off his shoulder with her fingertips.
That's too easy for you.
She nudged the fireball closer. Now they were burning their dainty fingers on the sting as they tried but failed to point it at her. One more little nudge and it would be all over. She was almost reluctant. She glanced down at Rofirth's inert body. Too bad he was already out of it. He would have enjoyed seeing Kelvin die. It was appropriate. It was Rofirth's remaining life force that was in the fireball doing the deed. She nudged the fireball just a tiny bit closer. Now was the moment. Now her triumph when all her enemies burn. Kelvin felt his skin blister. The stench of his own burning hair was in his nostrils. His hands and the leathery gauntlets protecting them were cooking on the copper surface of the chimera's sting. Waves of continuous pain were making him nauseous. His mother was beside him, but he had almost forgotten her. What magic she and Helba had had was vanquished. There was no way at all that they could survive. The fire around them was somehow fainter. Then, remarkably, the fireball vanished and his eyes flashed with pain.
Kelvin! Crisp them!
The fire was gone now. Through streaming eyes, he could see the cave above them. Two bodies were lying there, Zoanna's and Rofirth's. Were they dead?
Hurry, Kelvin, hurry! Oh, Kelvin, I can't find another rock! She's going to wake! Hurry!
No time to question. He placed his hands on the copper.
Kelvin, she's awake! She's getting up! She's...
In the blue afterimage, Kelvin saw two skeletons on the cave ledge. One stood upright with raised hands, but now all flesh was gone from it. Yet it remained vertical, unwilling to fall down. The very bones were shapely, retaining the outline of a beautiful woman. The figure moved. It didn't fall. Its arms came together over its head, as if shaping something between the bone fingers. Something like another fireball.
Kelvin!
Now nothing remained on the ledge or in the cave but ash. As he stared upward, the ash stirred in a morning breeze and slowly lost all shape.
Kelvin, did you get them?
They're gone. Forever, I think.
Oh, good. Your mother?
He looked down at the crumpled heap that had been she who had borne him.
I don't know.
Ah, she may survive. You may. I may.
Yes.
The war. Will you surrender to me?
War? Surrender?
Do it, son. Please.
I'll do what you ask. Your side won. Kelvinia stands defeated.
In that case, I'm sure we will survive. Charlene, hands.
Charlene lifted her arms with difficulty and placed burned palms against Helba's. The blackness disappeared from their hands. Both women grew rosy and visibly stronger. Burns and scorch marks disappeared. Fire-frizzed hair lost tips of ash and became all dark and healthy. Helba's shoulder wound stopped bleeding, and she removed one hand from Charlene to start to pull out the arrow's head.
Kelvin!
Hands touched, gripped, firmed. Helba held his right, his mother his left. The agony faded, his heart resumed beating normally. Strength came back in waves that were positively exhilarating.
Ah, there! We are now whole again, thanks to some help from a friend.
That was an overstatement, for she still had a crossbow wound in her arm, but now she was able to attend to it. John appeared suddenly, breaking through some brush. In her arms was Katva. Over her left shoulder hung the sling that had saved all of them.
Kelvin, we did it!
We did, sister!
How did you get here?
She inherited some of her mother's latent talent. Katbar recognized it. Smart Katbar.
Oh, it was awful. I looked for another rock after I changed, but I couldn't find one. I knew all the time she'd only stay down for so long. If you hadn't lightninged her, Kel...
Katbar, who had been contentedly snuggling in her arms, suddenly stiffened and jumped down.
There's a presence. A presence whose energy I utilized.
Kelvin's heart resumed pounding. Did this mean Zoanna had somehow survived the lightning? Had they been cruelly tricked?
Calm yourselves.
It seemed familiar, yet strange. It wasn't Zoanna, or Helba's, or Charlene's, or John's. Yet he knew that voice. It...
Mervania?
Perceptive.
But I hear you. Why aren't you in my head?
Because I'm here outside your head, inferior life form. Oh, I came to tell you that you needn't bring those dragon berries. One of you planted some seeds, maybe accidentally. I've now got plenty of them.
The seeds they had carried with them and that Kyan had lost? They had somehow come up in the Chimera's frame?
You catch on, eventually, human food stuff.
Then I won't need to return to your frame? Ever?
Don't say it.
No, you won't have to return, Kelvin.
No, damn it, Merv. If you kept your mouth shut, he might have come. And we could have eaten him.
I know, Merton. But leave me my foibles. He's a cute boy.
You came all the way here, astrally, just to tell me that.
No trouble, Kelvin. Actually, I thought I might give you some help. But you seem to have done well enough on your own. Not without the use of my present, though.
Yes. Will you stick around? Do you mean to stay here?
Oh, calm yourself again, Kelvin. No. You won't see me again unless you come visiting, which I wouldn't advise. I want to find my own kind. In an infinity of frames, there has to be one where an intelligent life form is dominant, where one of our kind may have hatched and survived in a civilized manner, instead of degraded by savages. Here, the only intelligent beings are Hokats and dragons.
Ah, I see.
Unless your wife would like to visit.
What?
Don't be concerned. We wouldn't eat her. But we could give her more of the powder, so she could birth one of our kind in a suitable environment. It's a rare talent to be able to...
No!
Well, I did help her. Considering that I already had the dragon berries, I really didn't have to.
You already had... when you... the birthing?
Oh, her and her damn fool sentiment.
Kelvin realized that Mervania had indeed been generous, by Chimera definitions. She had no longer needed him for the berries, yet she had done him a singular favor. She had saved his wife's life.
Actually, I did it mostly for the offspring. This is no frame for a superior life form.
All the same, Mervania, thanks.
Now see what you've done, Merv. You've made him grateful. The mush is so solid you can bite it.
But he has such a charmingly foolish image of me.
I think my daughter does look like you, Mervania. And I don't mind.
Why, thank you, Kelvin.
Goodbye, Mervania.
After a moment, he realized that the Chimera was gone. It was not a big, fancy wedding. Certainly nothing to compare with what Kyan's had been. But when John took Charlene's hand, pushed back her copper hair, and gazed into her violet eyes, he said,
Charlene, we are again wed. For always. You and I.
Yes, John. Always. You and I.
There was not a dry eye in the ballroom of what had been Kelvinia's palace. Later, after the formal reception and the shaking of hands of all well-wishers, the bride, groom, their family, and closest friends sat together in the lounging room. John still wiped at her eyes. It was apparent that she had been moved even more than she might have wished, and in more ways.
How come Helm was pregnant, and I'm not?
We'll... discuss that later.
We'll do more than that.
Kelvin turned to his wife. She had recovered so nicely during the past weeks. No nightmares, though he hardly understood how that was possible. Maybe it was the efficiency of the Chimera's power. She sat there calmly nursing Charles, whose pink, chubby expression never betrayed what he might have been. Twin Merlane lay sleeping beside her. They were to be knights by mutual agreement, now that the marriage of their grandparents had been restored.
You comfortable, dearest?
You ask me that so often. Yes, of course. But I'll be more comfortable once we're home.
Kelvin smiled. There was a type of comfort that he had not had recently that only she could supply.
Well, anyway...
Rufert repositioned the crown on his head.
That's another two words of your prophecy. Uniting four means Counts Klingland, Hermandy, and Kelvinia. We're one confederation now, each with one vote, with brothers Kildum and Kildee having the power to veto all the rest of us. In all of history, there's never been such an arrangement, but Helba wanted it.
It's for the best. I trust Helba. Kelvinia never had any difficulties with Klingland and Cants that Zoanna and your lookalike didn't invent. And with those boys in charge, you know Hermandy will behave itself.
They already got rid of their dictator. I say hooray for them.
I'm sure we all do.
And Kelvin, you know what's next for you. The prophecy says, until from seven there be one, only then will his task be done. Well, there are still three kingdoms left for you to conquer.
Well, I'm glad it's only old words some people believe in, and that I'm not even nominally in charge.
No one looked disappointed with Kelvin's answer, not even St. Helens. They were all too polite to speak the obvious. As a hero, he was an inferior life form. It was a great, fine time in Kelvinia and the Confederation.
Kelvin of Rudd, Book 3, Chimera's Copper, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1990, Tor Books. Published by arrangement with Piers Anthony and Robert E. Margraff. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication prohibited. Performed by David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Barbara Pennellini, Nick DePinto, Elizabeth Jernigan, Thomas Penny, Joe Brack, Richard Rowan, Terence Aselford, Bradley Smith, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Alyssa Wilmoth, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Kimberly Gilbert, David Harris, Joel David Santner, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, James Lewis. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Directed by Tim Getman. Dialogue editing and sound design by Thomas Hogan and Justin Wirtz. Theme music by Thomas Hogan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Kelvin of Rudd, be sure to look for the Nuclear Bombshell series and the Goblin Trilogy, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts.
Graphic Audio presents The Goblin Trilogy. Book 1, Goblin Quest.
Oh, Cousin Jig, mock duty, is it? How long before you're ready for real work?
Real work?
Glory, fighting, bloodshed. We want you to come along on a patrol.
I can't. I barely started on the muck duty.
But even the weak ones have their uses, you know. This one's gonna run ahead to flush out any game. Our own little hunting dog. We'll stay here to protect the lair. Now, if you find anything, we'll be along to do the fighting. All you have to do is stay alive long enough for us to rescue you. Go get him, dog! If you see anyone, make sure you scream before they kill you.
Do we really want to send a runt to do a dog's job?
Oh, dong.
Draw a weapon, or cry out for aid, and you'll never draw breath again. Turn around and walk into that room up there.
What's this?
I found him snooping up yonder passage.
So what do we do with him, Your Majesty?
Safest to slay him, though perhaps he could be of use to us. Idiot or no, he knows more of these tunnels than we do. At worst, he can precede us to lull the suspicions of any creatures we encounter. Still, I dislike the idea of a goblin in our group.
He could help us. Rumor has it the path we want is cloaked in watery darkness. Maybe he knows where it is.
To invite a goblin to join us is to invite treachery, cowardice, and deceit into our beds. What help he could provide does not justify the risk.
As if you've ever gotten anyone into your bed without flashing round your gold and your title. You try to betray us, we'll kill you. Same holds true if you try to escape. I don't like it, but we can't have you running loose, telling everyone we're here. But if you cooperate, I'll do my best to see you're still breathing at the end of the day.
Will you let me go and you find whatever it is you want?
Of course.
So, what is it you're looking for?
We seek the Rod of Creation.
The Rod of Creation?
The Rod of Creation. The power in that thing was the same magic the gods used to bring dragons into the world. Earthmaker only knows what gods the rod today.
A dragon?
What did you say?
Where's the lantern?
Shut up! The lantern?
It slipped free in the fall.
Something else is down here.
Available now in graphic audio.
I leave tomorrow. Later today, actually, for Avignon.
A vacation? It would certainly be long overdue. Or are you working on another episode of Chasing Historical Monsters?
Chasing History's Monsters. And yes, that's why I'm going to Avignon. My producer is being cost-conscious. Doug figures if he's sending a crew to France, he may as well get several segments out of it.
Be careful, Anya, that an historical monster does not come chasing you.
Graphic Audio presents Rogue Angel 39, City of Swords.
Charlemagne sought to make all of France and beyond his city of God. Unfortunately, he died before he could realize his goal. He succeeded in driving Muslims out of the Christian world, but not all of them. Perhaps in the third coming, Charlemagne's plan will be realized.
Miss Creed, you talk of rights. By right, your sword should be mine anyway. It should have passed to me. I should have inherited it. I know the sword you wield once belonged to Joan of Arc. It is a singular sword with five crosses etched on the pommel. I know singular swords. I know your sword's history.
Neither the time nor the place.
Then I will call on you later at your hotel. Perhaps I can convince you to change your mind. I can be quite persuasive. Do not dismiss me so lightly.
Now do not make this too difficult, Miss Creed. Surrender the sword.
Surrender it now or I will lop off your hand to get it.
Come and get it then.
Oh, we are not serial killers.
No, we're crusaders.
Paladins.
Yes, paladins. And tonight, Luke, the cleansing has begun. This is your destiny.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.